Zek had mixed feelings. Wanted to see Glenda again, but still occupied emotionally with Tawanda. The closer they came to Fort Drum, the more confused and bewildered he became. He remembered the words of his mother, "Cows won't ever smell like flowers." He had known few flowers in his lifetime, only cows and the smell of smoke and pine needles. The torment he now felt frightened him more than the presence of bears or wolves. If predators attacked, he knew what to do: run, build fires, kill or be killed. But girls were yet so alien he didn't know how to handle it. He could not brush from his memory the smell of Glenda and the dizziness he felt as they rode together that night at the frolic. But this now seemed trivial compared to the experience of sleeping with Tawanda. His reverie was broken when Tobias said, "Zek, if you don't wake up, you're going to ride Ishmael into a palmetto clump. What's the matter with you? You want to stop and sleep some?"
"I'm sorry, Papa.
I was just thinking. I'm not sleepy at all." Tobias smiled, thinking he understood the problem, but not knowing about Zek's experience with Glenda at Fort Drum or the conversation Zek once had with Emma. When they entered the settlement at noon, the street was deserted, and there was no one in the store except Turner. Zek hovered in the background as Tobias inquired about quinine, and was told they had none, but it was on order and should be in soon. He waited until his father started out before going to the counter and saying hesitantly,
"Hello, Mr. Turner. I'm Zek McIvey. Is Glenda here?"
"No, she's not. She's up in Jacksonville, staying with her aunt, so she can go to school." He then looked closely at Zek and said, "I remember you now. You were here last spring during a frolic. Glenda has spoken of you." Although he wanted to see her, Zek felt relief that Glenda was not there. This would give him time to sort out his feeling for her and for Tawanda before seeing her again. He said, "Will she be coming back soon?"
"She'll be here for the Christmas frolic. Are you coming? I think she expects you."
"Well, I don't know, Mr. Turner, but I'll try. Next time you write Glenda, would you tell her I came by to see her?"
"Why don't you write yourself? I can give you the address. I know she'd be glad to hear from you."
"No, you tell her for me, if you will,"
Zek responded, not wanting to admit he couldn't write.
"I don't know when I'll be back here to post a letter. I better go now. Papa's waiting outside."
Turner was amused by Zek's awkwardness as he almost fell over a pickle barrel while walking rapidly from the store. Emma ran to them immediately when they entered the clearing, her cries of, "Tobias! Tobias!" bringing the others outside. Tobias dismounted quickly and hugged her, and then she said,
"You've been gone so long, I was worried about you. But I'm glad you're back now. We had a bad thing happen while you were gone."
"What's that?" Tobias asked anxiously, alarmed by the gravity in her voice. Frog spoke up first.
"Bonzo died, Mr. McIvey. He took real sick on the way back from Punta Rasa. It was malaria. We'd done everything we could for him, and for a while it seemed he got better. But on the first night back here, he just up and went away."
"That's too bad," Tobias said regretfully. "I'm real sorry to hear it. I wish I could have at least been here for the funeral."
"He's down by the river," Frog said. "Miss Emma said words, and it was a proper burial. It surprised us all, and I sure hated it. Me and old Bonzo went through a lot together."
Zek said, "Papa had it too, and that's why we're so late getting home. He was so sick he liked to have died. The medicine man cured him."
"Tobias," Emma exclaimed, grabbing his arm, "you had it too? Oh, Lord, I should have been there with you."
"There's nothing to fret about now," he assured her. "The Indians looked after me real good. I still got some medicine Miami Billy made for me, and they're getting in some quinine at Fort Drum. All I need is a few days' rest, and I'll be fine."
"Did you have trouble finding the Indians?"
Skillet asked. "We all figured you'd end up down in Cuba."
"It wasn't easy," Tobias said. "There were times I didn't think we'd make it."
"We've seen things you won't believe," Zek said excitedly. "I walked on vines right over the top of the woods, and the cypress trees down there are so big they make everything here look like nothing. And I went to Peje Oki."
"What's Peje Oki?"
Emma asked curiously. "It's a place like nowhere else. We went there in a dugout canoe. Tawanda took me."
Emma said, "Let's go in the house and I'll fix something to eat. Then I want to hear all about your trip and everything you saw."
The entire troop followed Tobias and Zek inside.
Chapter 22.
A cold December wind stung his face as Zek rode alone across the prairie. There had been no change of seasons here, no brilliant colors to signal the coming of fall, no bare trees surrounded by decaying leaves to herald winter, no ice-covered bushes or frozen ponds. The cabbage palms and palmetto clumps and cypress stands looked the same and stayed the same, and the biting wind was the only indication of the dormant season. Zek shivered as he pulled the jacket collar tighter around his neck. Then he put Ishmael into a canter, hurrying along because the days were now shorter and sundown would come 2 hours earlier than usual. Mile after mile of brown prairie all looked the same as he headed for Fort Drum and the Christmas frolic. The sun was not brilliant as in summer, and there was a desolate yellow glow across the land, a mid-afternoon twilight made even dimmer by an overcast gray sky. There were no long flights of birds winging their way casually toward distant feeding grounds, and the cypress stands were flooded with white and gray specks as egrets and herons sought refuge from the wind and cold. It was 3 days before Christmas, a festive time Zek had never really known. Emma always tried to fix something special for Christmas dinner, baking sweet potato pies covered with wild honey, a turkey if Tobias could kill one, or whatever else was available to mark this one day from all the others. But there had been no gaily decorated tree, no exchange of colorfully wrapped gifts, no frolic or church services. When they lived in the scrub, the only gifts he received were made with Tobias's hands, a china berry slingshot or a little windmill or a toy gun carved at night while he was sleeping. For the past 3 years, Tobias purchased things at a trading post, hiding them in a barn loft until Christmas morning. A bolt of cloth or a bonnet for Emma, a hunting knife or a canteen for Zek. But there was no gathering of a family clan with joyous singing and a yard full of excited children. Several coins jingled in Zek's pocket, and he wanted to reach the settlement in time to purchase gifts before attending the frolic. For his mother, he wanted lilac water, remembering when she said she once smelled like flowers, but no more. And for his father, a pocket watch with a long chain, something he had seen men wearing in Punta Rasa. As he drew nearer to Fort Drum, Zek's spirits rose and fell as unpredictably as winter weather. High and soaring one moment, downcast the next, excited by the reality of seeing Glenda again, but remembering Tawanda. Each one took turns occupying his thoughts, and to him each was as different as marshland from prairie. He couldn't picture Tawanda at a Christmas frolic, or Glenda in a chickie. Both were equally fascinating, yet so very far apart, in totally different worlds. Night beat him to the trading post, and the glow of coal oil lamps spilled from the old building when he rode up and hitched Ishmael. The frolic would not be held in the open this time, since the barn-like meeting hall was now completed. Turner was starting for the door to lock up as Zek entered. He said, "Hello, Mr. Turner. Looks like I just made it in time. I need to buy a few things before you close up."
"Sure, Zek. I was just leaving to get ready for the frolic. What you got in mind?"
"Lilac water, if you have it. If you don't, something else that smells good, like flowers. It's for Mama."
"I got something better than lilac. It has the scent of peach blossoms. What size bottle you want?"
"The biggest you got, and I want a pocket watch, too, one with a chain."
Turner took the items from a case beside the counter and put them into a brown paper sack.
"Is that it?"
"I need to get a little something for Skillet and Pearly May and Frog. Maybe a couple of pipes and tobacco and a sunbonnet. And I need a bundle of red ribbon."
Turner added these to the sack, his interest raised by the strange names.
"Be anything else?"
"A dozen apples. Ishmael needs a Christmas treat, too."
"Ishmael? Who's that?"
he asked, his curiosity getting the best of him.
"My horse."
"Oh, that's mighty thoughtful of you. Wouldn't many men spend money buying a Christmas gift for a horse?"
That'll be a total of $12.
Zek put money on the counter, picked up the packages, and turned to leave. Turner said,
I'm glad you made it for the frolic, Zek. It ought to be starting about now. I'll be a bit late, but Glenda's already over there.
Zek went outside and put one package in the saddlebag. Then he started feeding apples to Ishmael. He watched as Turner walked away down the dark street. Then it dawned on him he should have purchased something for Glenda.
Ishmael had eaten four apples when the sound of fiddles drifted from a nearby building.
Zek put the remainder in the saddlebag and walked slowly to the meeting hall. When he entered and looked about, he felt embarrassment. He was dressed in faded jeans, dusty boots, and denim jacket. And all the other men and boys wore black suits, starched white shirts, and string ties. Chairs were lined against two walls, and the fiddle players were on a raised platform in the rear of the room. Adjacent to that, a table covered with a white cloth held a large punch bowl and glass cups. Glenda was behind the table, her red hair standing out like a flag. She wore a blue dress, decorated with white lace, with a blue ribbon in her hair. When she glanced toward the door and noticed Zek, she waved at him. He stared, seeing her almost as a stranger, even more beautiful than he remembered. For a moment, Zek hesitated, feeling the urge to walk backward to the door and run for Ishmael, then retreat to the prairie where he belonged. Had he known about Christmas frolics, he could have purchased suitable clothes somewhere, but no one told him. He had never seen his father in a suit or his mother in a blue dress with lace. And because of this, he blamed them for his present situation and felt anger at them for allowing him to come to the frolic dressed as he was. Then it came to him they wouldn't know either. Perhaps they once did, but that was too long ago in the past. In his memory, he knew there had been no Christmas frolic in Florida for his mother and father, and none now, and the sudden anger at them for something beyond their knowledge shamed him. His self-consciousness was his alone, for no one paid him even the slightest attention for the way he was dressed. The black suits in the room were worn only for funerals and weddings and the Christmas frolic, and by morning every man and boy would become a duplicate of Zek. If he had looked closer, he would have seen moth holes, torn seams, and frayed collars and cuffs, outgrown pants 4 inches short, missing buttons, and coat sleeves that came halfway to the elbow when an arm was bent. A pot-bellied stove at the left of the door grew ripe and turned red, overheating Zek and causing him to move away. He walked across the open floor to the table. One of the ladies in attendance said, "Would you like punch?"
"I'll serve it," Glenda said.
She poured a cup, came around the end of the table, and handed it to Zek.
"I'm sorry I haven't come to you sooner. I had to help Mother. It's really good to see you again. I thought about you often and hoped you'd be here tonight."
"I came by the store this fall to see you."
"Yes, I know. Daddy told me. I wish I would have been here. I like Jacksonville, but it's good to be home."
"You like it better than here?"
"Not better, but there are a lot of things to do there that we don't have here. They have cafes and little parks and theaters. Every Saturday night there's a dance, and on Sunday afternoon people dress up and ride in their carriages. It's all a lot of fun for a change, but I like Fort Drum, too."
"We go to a cafe in Punta Raza. They make good fried chicken and fish. But there's not much else to do there. It's just a place to ship cattle to Cuba. We own 150 acres on the Caloosahatchee, and someday I'm going to build a cabin on it so we won't have to camp out every time we take cows there."
"That would be nice. Maybe someday you can take me with you. I'd like to see Punta Raza. It's such a lovely name."
"You'll be disappointed. Like I say, it's just a cow town. Wouldn't be nothing like Jacksonville."
The music started again, and soon the room thundered with the sound of leather pounding the wooden floor. Glenda said,
"Would you like to dance with me?"
"You know I don't know how."
She grabbed his arm. "I'll teach you."
Zek pulled away. "I'm not dressed right, Glenda. You can see that. I ought not even be here, much less out on the dance floor. If I'd known everybody else had on a suit but me, I wouldn't have come inside."
"Oh, pooh," she said, taking his arm again. "You look fine. Mother has to practically hog-tie Daddy to get him in a suit, and he'll probably show up tonight dressed just like you are. And besides that, Every girl here has her eye on you and would stand in line to dance with you. I know I would. And I'm sure not going to let them. You're not going to get away from me that easy, Zek McIvy.
Well, okay, he agreed reluctantly. But if it don't work out, let's quit.
Zek tried vainly to imitate the others, watching constantly and as stiff as a cypress pole, kicking when they kicked and turning when they turned. He was beginning to get the hang of it until they changed partners and swung down the line. Then his boots grew as large as a wild steer's horns, tripping him up and staggering him sideways. He righted himself clumsily and retired from the floor. Glenda continued the dance, and Zek watched from the sideline as she skipped from partner to partner, floating down the line as light as a feather. She glanced at him as she passed by, motioning for him to come back, but he backed further away and leaned against the wall. When the music stopped, she came to him immediately. He said, "I'm sorry. I must have looked plumb awful out there."
"You didn't either. You were doing real good, better than most people when they first try."
"I guess dancing isn't my strong suit. Maybe I better stick to horses."
"You can learn. And I bet you didn't know how to ride a horse first time you got on one. We'll try again in a little while. Would you like more punch?"
He said, "Maybe that would help get the frog out of my throat. That scared me out there worse than a pack of wolves."
Glenda sensed he was more shamed by his performance than he would admit. She said,
"Let's go outside for some fresh air. We can have punch later."
The cold wind struck them as they left the building and started up the street. They walked silently until Glenda said,
"It's cold. Put your arm around me."
He put his arm around her waist as they continued. And then he said, "It's going to be bad out on the prairie tonight. I'll have to build a big fire to stay warm."
"The prairie?" she exclaimed, stopping and facing him. "What do you mean? You're not going home this late at night, are you?"
"Yes. Soon as we get back to the hall, I'll go out a ways and make camp and go on in the morning."
"Zek, you can't do that. It's too cold and there's no need of it. You can stay at my house tonight. We have an extra room."
"Your house?" he questioned, not sure he understood the invitation. "Your daddy would probably take a whip to me if I even showed up there."
"He wouldn't either. He wouldn't mind at all. I've told my mother and father how I feel about you."
"Told them what?"
"That I love you. More than anything. They know about us."
Zek gulped.
"I'd like to stay, Glenda. I really would. But I just can't. It don't seem right."
"It would if we were promised."
"Promised? What's that?"
"You know, going steady. Promised to each other."
"How can we go steady with you up in Jacksonville?"
"I won't be there forever. School ends in May, and if I'm promised to you, I won't even look at another boy. Will you do it?"
"I guess," he agreed reluctantly, still not sure what it meant. And then he said with more fervor,
"Yes, I'd like to. But you'll have to tell me what to do."
"You can start by kissing me." He took her in his arms and pressed his lips to hers gently, trying not to be overly eager and hurt her, and the smell got to him again. His senses reeled as he breathed deeply of her, his hands feeling flesh as soft as goose down. She clung to him firmly, then she looked up and said,
"Will you stay now? Mother and Daddy'll go to bed and leave us alone together."
He relaxed his grip, but still held her.
"Don't be mad at me, Glenda, but I can't. Next time I will. I have to be home real early in the morning. Papa needs me to help him with something, and we have to be in Kissimmee before noon tomorrow."
"Well, I guess if you have to, you have to," she said, disappointed. "But don't you forget we're promised, you hear? I mean it, Zek McIvy. You're promised to me now."
"I won't forget. I could never forget something like that."
"You can kiss me again if you want to."
"I want to," he murmured, pulling her back to him. Once again, overwhelmed by the smell of lilacs.
A full moon could be seen fleetingly as clouds raced across the sky.
Zek galloped Ishmael during brief moments of light, then slowed to a walk when darkness rushed back in. He was 10 miles out of the settlement when he stopped at a cypress stand and built a fire. He searched himself for a reason why he lied about his father needing him, why he refused to stay in Fort Drum with Glenda. He had not hesitated to sleep with Tawanda in his arms within 50 feet of her mother and father. Yet Glenda's invitation frightened him beyond his understanding. Other things also bothered him, his ease with Tawanda and his shyness with Glenda. He wondered if his father had ever been so tormented by girls, or if this anguish was his alone. He liked Glenda very much, this he knew, but it puzzled him why she had chosen him so quickly over boys in Jacksonville who could make him look like nothing more than the prairie hick he took himself to be. She was the most beautiful girl he had ever seen, or probably would see, and he should be overjoyed by her love, yet he couldn't comprehend her choice of him, which made accepting it more difficult. He got up and fed Ishmael an apple. Then he said, "I like you best of all, Ishmael. We go where we want to go, and there's no fuss about what to wear or where we're going to sleep or nothing else. Maybe I best stick with you and let the rest of it go. It just ain't worth it." The horse whinnied and nudged him, wanting another apple. He lay close to the fire and rolled himself in his blanket, shivering as the wind sang through the cypress trees. He said aloud, "Lordy, I wish Tawanda was here now. She's so warm to sleep with." He no sooner said it than he wondered why. It was Glenda he was promised to, not Tawanda. And if he hadn't been so stubborn, he would know by now which one was the warmest. He had not even given Glenda a chance to prove anything, but why? He asked himself this question over and over again and received no answer. No one was in the house but Emma when Zek rode in. As soon as he entered, she said, "I'll bet you haven't eaten a thing since you left Fort Drum. Sit at the table and I'll fix something for you." She noticed he seemed agitated, and she watched him closely while fiddling with a spoon, stirring a pot unnecessarily. Finally, she said, "Did you have a good time?" "Yes, Mama. It was real nice." "Maybe when your father gets to feeling better, we can go to the next frolic with you." Zek toyed with the food, and then he said, "Mama, do you know what it means to be promised?"
"Yes, I know."
"Your father and I were promised. It means you intend to get married someday, and you're not supposed to be with anyone else." "Can a man like two women at the same time, and like one just as much as the other?"
"I suppose so. But there'll come a time when he has to choose between them. No man can have two wives. It's against the Lord's way."
"How do you choose? And how do you know you've chosen the right one?" Emma sat at the table and faced Zek.
"I can't answer that. I knew the moment I met Tobias. I didn't have any doubt, and he didn't either. Each person must choose alone. If there's doubt, be careful and don't make a hasty decision and a mistake. There's more to being married than just liking someone. You have to love, too. And one of them will be the mother of your children."
Zek noticed she had shifted from he to you, and suspected she somehow knew he was talking about himself. Perhaps his father had told her about Tawanda. He said,
"Mama, it hurts bad, and I don't know how to handle it. Me and Glenda got promised last night. She wanted me to spend the night at her house, and it was fine with her mother and father, but I didn't. I slept out on the prairie. There was a girl in the Indian village, Tawanda. Me and her..."
"You don't have to tell me," Emma broke in.
"I knew something happened with you down there."
"A mother doesn't have to be told. Tobias said nothing, so don't think he gave away your secret. It's up to you, Zek. It's your choice, and you'll have to make it. I can't help you. I'll say only one thing. Choose wisely. And don't end up hurting one of them real bad for nothing. Don't make either one of them think they're the one if they're not. That wouldn't be fair."
"They're so different, Mama."
Tawanda is like Ishmael, and Glenda is more like you. I don't see why Glenda even likes me. She's going to school, and she knows how to dance and do all kinds of stuff like that. I can't read a book or dance or do nothing but chase cows. I even looked like a fool the way I was dressed at the frolic. Tawanda wouldn't have cared. They've got me so mixed up, I wish I'd never seen either one of them. All you're doing is feeling the pain of growing up, Emma said gently. I know it hurts. Everybody goes through it. There's nothing like the torment of boys and girls discovering each other for the first time, trying to make a choice. But, Zek, you don't have all that much to choose from out here. But you will choose. When the time comes, you will. So don't fret about it. Sooner or later, you'll know. I hope so, Mama. And I thank you for listening. I just needed to talk to someone about it. Then he said enthusiastically, I bought you a Christmas gift. You'll like it. Let's see. Let me see what it is. Oh, no. You'll have to wait. It's a surprise for Christmas morning. Emma put her arms around him and said, I love you, Zek, and I can see why any girl would want you. Girls want a man, not some fancy dancer who couldn't skin a rabbit if his family was starving. You don't understand this, but girls do. That's why I chose Tobias. You've got strength like your father, and that's what girls look for in a mate. Glenda has more sense than you give her credit for. She knows what she's doing. Zek suddenly realized something he should have known all along. There is more to life and survival than frolics or black suits or bowls full of punch. The Kissimmee and the Caloosahatchee and all the prairies and swamps between are not Jacksonville with its parks and cafes and theaters and ever will be. And someone must round up the cows and blaze the trails and fight the wolves and bears and plant the orange trees like his father had done. He was schooled not in reading and writing but in survival. And this was not something he should be ashamed of. His teachers were the best, and he loved them for it. He vowed he would never again make excuses to himself or to anyone for what he was or who he was. He was a McIvy and proud of it. He jumped up suddenly and said, I think I'll go down in the woods and see can I shoot a turkey. Then I'll cut us a tree. I bought a big bundle of ribbon at the store to decorate it. We never had a Christmas tree, and it's about time we did. Chapter 23. February, 1880. Emma, Emma, come and see. You gotta see. Tobias was running through the woods as fast as his lanky legs would carry him, shouting again, They're blooming, Emma! They're blooming! Emma rushed from the house and said, What on earth is the matter with you, Tobias? The way you're hollering, you'll scare the life out of everybody in Kissimmee. The orange trees! Tobias panted. They're in bloom. They finally done it. Millions of buds busting out all over. And the smell, lordy, the smell, you got to see it. You know you ought not get so worked up, Emma admonished. If you don't calm yourself, you'll have another spell. The shouting attracted the attention of everyone else, and they poured from the barn in the cabins. Pearlie May had given birth to 3 boys in 3 years and gained an additional 30 pounds in the process, and she waddled like a duck as her brood followed close behind her. Skillet scooped up 2 of the toddlers and put them on his shoulders as he ran for the sound of the commotion. 3 more times, Tobias had replanted the orange trees and expanded the plot, and now there were 100 acres inside the fenced area. He said to the assemblage, "We're going to have enough to fill a whole schooner at Fort Pierce. It'll take 10 wagons to haul them there. That's what the future is, oranges. We don't have to round 'em up or brand 'em or do nothing but pluck 'em off the trees." "Calm yourself, Tobias," Emma cautioned again. "Let's all go and see before he gives himself a stroke." Tobias took the lead, stepping lively, and halfway through the woods it came to them, seeping from the grove a 1/4 mile distant, an overpowering fragrance. They all stopped, feeling intoxicated by what hit them. Emma breathed deeply and said, "Oh, my! Oh, my, Tobias, I've never smelled anything like it in all my life. It's like the Lord has turned the rain to perfume and has come down over everything. I wish I could figure out a way to put it in a bottle." When they left the woods and came into the open area, they were greeted by a sea of white blossoms, row upon row of trees that seemed to be covered with snow,
There was a steady drone as bees darted from blossom to blossom, gorging themselves on nectar. Skillet said, "Lordy me, Mr. Tobias, it sure is a sight. Will all them little flowers turn into oranges?" "They surely will. I done told all of you. There's as much gold on them trees as a whole herd of cows." "We ought to build some beehives," Zek said. "We could get lots of honey out of here."
"If it would taste as good as the blossoms smell," Emma said, "it would be a gift of the Lord. Orange blossom honey, it even sounds pretty." "I'm real proud of you, Tobias. You stuck with it all this time, and now it's finally happened."
"There's been times I wanted to quit and give it up," Tobias said, "especially when the cows kept eating the trees, but they can't do it no more unless they can fly. And that's thanks to you, Emma. I wouldn't have ever bought taller trees if you hadn't told me to. I'd have just gone on forever planting cow fodder."
"I could stand here the rest of my life and just sniff," Emma said. "I hope heaven smells like this. But I've got things to do at the house. I'm just getting started with my dress, and the wedding is almost here."
"I bet old Ishmael'll be glad when that wedding is over," Frog said teasingly. "Mr. Zek done wore that poor hoss out running him from here to Fort Drum."
"Ah, shut up, Frog," Zek said. "I haven't been over there that much, and you know it. You just running on like you did when Skillet got married."
"What I said come true, didn't it?" Frog chuckled. "I said the woods would be full of nigger babies, and just look, poor old Pearly May ain't much more than a brood mare."
"Don't pay no mind to him," Skillet said. "He don't close that big fly trap. I put so many knots on his head, he'll look like a sack of hickernuts."
Zek and Glenda had finally set their wedding for the last week in February, having honored her father's request that they wait until she finished 4 years of schooling in Jacksonville. She now helped her father in the store and tutored area children in English and math. Skillet and Frog followed Tobias into the grove for a closer look as the others went back to the clearing. As soon as they were in the house, Zek said, "Mama, I'm glad to see Papa so happy with his grove, but there's something about it that worries me real bad."
"What's that?"
"He's worked so hard all these years, and finally it's about to pay off. But somebody could come along and take it all away from him, even the house and everything. We don't own this land."
"That worries me, too. Tobias thinks it's ours because we live on it. But I know it isn't. If somebody did take the grove, it would just about kill him. The malaria spells are coming so often now he can't go on riding herd much longer. Sometimes when he walks down to the garden, he comes back panting like a horse that's been run. He needs something like the grove to stay here and look after."
"We've got to own this land, and a bunch more, too," Zek said. "It's getting harder all the time to find wild cows. And if we stay in the cattle business, we'll have to start raising our own or buy them off other folks and fatten them up. Somebody has bought a big piece of land up north of here and built a house on it, and if they want to, they got a legal right to stop us from grazing there anymore. And it's soon going to be the same everywhere."
"You want me to talk to Tobias again?"
"It wouldn't do any good. I'm going to handle it myself. Last time I was in Kissimmee, I went to the land office and inquired about this place. All the land here was once owned by a timber company that never did anything with it. It was too much prairie and not enough trees, so they let it go back for taxes. I can buy it now for 20 cents an acre. I'll tell Papa I'm going to Kissimmee for supplies, then I'll take the buckboard and some of the money in those trunks and buy the land. Papa won't know the money's gone. He hasn't looked in those trunks in years.
Just go ahead and do what you need to do. I'll never tell him.
While he's at the grove, I'll take the money down to the barn and hide it. Then tomorrow morning I'll set out for Kissimmee. I know it'd break Papa's heart if somebody took his grove, and that's sure to happen sooner or later if I don't do something about it."
"You're doing the right thing, Zek. And don't ever let it bother you because your Papa doesn't know. It's not like you're going behind his back for something you want. It's for his sake. And money isn't the reason why Tobias hasn't bought the land himself. He's just too stubborn to admit he's wrong. And he is wrong about this. He thinks the land is a gift from the Lord for everybody's use, and it's not right for anybody to lay claim to it. Maybe it ought to be that way, but it's not. You go on now and hide that money before he gets back. Someday, he'll be thankful you did this."
"I hope so, Mama. I don't want to see him hurt. And there's nothing the Lord can do if somebody shows up here with a deed.
That would be the end of it."
Zek came from the land office smiling, clutching the deed firmly as if it might fly away. The title was in three names, his
and Tobias and Emma. And later, he would add Glenda's name after she became a McIvy. He unhitched the horse and drove the buckboard down the street, overwhelmed by the fact they were now landowners. He felt like shouting it for all to hear, McIvy, land, cattle, and oranges. They were no longer squatters, but rightful owners, free and clear with no debt owed. He stopped at one of the mercantile stores and went inside, telling the clerk he was interested in a black suit. There was a rack of them, all identical, double-breasted, and scratchy-looking, large mother-of-pearl buttons and baggy pants. He held one in front of him and looked in a mirror, thinking that a man would have to be crazy to wear such an outfit except for absolute necessity. For Glenda, he would do it. But he would not suffer alone. He also purchased one for his father, surmising they would all have to hold Tobias down and force it on him, like saddling a wild horse. He also bought white shirts and string ties and a tin of boot polish. There was a rack of dresses next to the men's department, and he examined them reluctantly, hoping no one would come in and see him in the ladies' section. The rack was next to a counter piled high with corsets and bloomers and brassieres, and he glanced at them warily and at the female clerk who watched him with amusement. He finally selected a dress he thought would fit Emma. It was pale blue, like the one Glenda had worn at the Christmas frolic, and it was decorated with white lace. He put the packages in the buckboard and started down the street, wanting to hurry home and show the deed to Emma and surprise her with the dress. At first, he just glanced at it as it glinted in the sunlight strapped to the saddle as a man rode past. And then it dawned on him what he had seen. A double-barreled 10-gauge shotgun, half the length of the horse, its weight pulling the saddle sideways. He stopped the buckboard abruptly, turned, and followed the rider until he hitched the horse in front of a saloon. Zek reached beneath the seat, picked up the Winchester and pumped a bullet into the chamber. Then he walked quickly to the man and shoved the barrel into his back, saying, "Mister, if you so much as breathe, I'll blow the backbone slam out of you." "What the hell?" "The shotgun. I want to see the stock. Just ease over there with me and don't make any sudden moves." Zek turned the shotgun over with his left hand, and there it was, carved into the wood, MCI. He said, "That's my papa's mark. This gun was stole from him a long time ago. Are you the one who took it?" "I don't know what this is all about, but I didn't steal no gun. I bought that thing early this morning and paid $15 for it. The man who sold it to me said he was tired of hauling it around because it's so heavy. He had a new Winchester, one like you got there." "Don't you lie to me," Zek said, shoving the rifle harder. "Can you prove you bought it?" "No, I can't prove it. Can you prove you bought that buckboard? I paid cash money, and that's all I can say. I got a place just north of here, and everybody in Kissimmee knows me. They also know I ain't the kind to steal a gun or nothing else. Only reason I bought that blunderbuss is to shoot wild hogs that keeps tearing up my pasture. If it belongs to your daddy, you can have it. Just take that damn rifle away before you bust my ribs with it." Zek lowered the rifle and said, "You don't seem like a bushwhacking rustler, so I'll take your word for it. But I'd sure be interested to know where the man is who sold you the gun. They was camped 3 miles east of here, down by Panther Creek. But if I was you, I wouldn't go there alone looking for a fight. There was 9 of them, the meanest-looking bunch I ever seen. I was scared myself till I rode away. I thought for sure they was going to rob me. Maybe I'll shoot them in the back like they're prone to do with men and dogs. Fella, I ain't joshing. I wouldn't go after that bunch unless I had an army with me." Zek took a doubloon from his pocket, handed it to the man, and said, "Here's your money back. I want the gun. It used to mean a lot to my papa, and I'm sorry if I scared you." "Well, you sure as hell did. I'm not used to having a Winchester shoved up my butt. I'll just go on in here now and drink myself $15 worth of whiskey to settle my nerves." Zek put the shotgun in the buckboard. "Which way is it to Panther Creek where they were camped?" "About 3 miles out along the main east road, there's a trail that goes off to the south into some thick woods. That's where they was early this morning. But you're a fool if you go there." "Much obliged for the directions," Zek said as he drove off. "Didn't need that damn cannon no way," the man muttered as he went into the saloon. Zek trotted the horse until he found the trail. Then he tied Ishmael to a bush and walked into the woods, the rifle in his hands. He stayed to the left of the path, moving slowly from tree to tree, listening for any sound that might indicate the men's presence. 9-1 was bad odds, even for a Winchester, and he wished Frog and Skillet were with him. But if he could slip up on them undetected, he could draw down before they had a chance to go for their guns. What he would do next, he didn't know. He covered 100 yards, and then came to the remains of a camp beneath a live oak. Empty bean cans were scattered about, and the fire coals were still warm. An empty gallon jug with a corncob stopper lay at the base of the tree. He kicked the jug and watched as it tumbled over the ground, down the bank, and into the creek. He said, "Bastards, I'll catch up with you someday." Then he turned and went back to the buckboard. Tobias was at the grove when Zek drove in, and Emma was in the house. When he saw that she was alone, he grinned and waved the deed. Then he hugged her and said, "It's done, Mama." "How much did you buy?" she asked curiously. 20,000 acres. 20,000? That's an awful lot, isn't it, Zek? Will we ever have need of so much? Mama, at 20 cents an acre, it was only 8 sacks of coins. It didn't even make a dent in one trunk, and that gold's not doing anything but gathering dust. Well, it's for sure Tobias will never know the difference. The land is ours now, clear and legal. Nobody can ever come along and take it from us. I'll sleep better knowing that. Where's Papa? Zek then asked. I've got a real surprise for him in the buckboard. He's been up at the grove all day, just sitting and looking. I think he expects to see oranges pop out right before his eyes. What'd you get him? His old shotgun. Really? How on earth did you do that? I saw a man with it, and sure enough, it had Papa's mark on the stock. He bought it off another man, and I gave him his money back and took it. I went looking for the man who sold it, but he was already gone. It's a good thing he was. You ought not be around folks like that. You could get yourself killed. It's best you forget things that happened a long time ago and let it be. I don't forget easy, Mama. Just don't worry about it. When the time comes, I'll handle it. I got Papa another surprise, too. I bought both of us a suit for the wedding. That'll be a sight to see, Emma snorted. It'll take a team of oxen to drag him into it. Only time I figure to see your daddy in a suit is at his funeral, and then he'll probably pop up in the casket and put on his overalls. I got something for you, too, Zek said, smiling. I'll bring it in now. He went to the buckboard and returned with a brown paper bag. He held it behind him and teased. Guess what it is and you can have it. Guess wrong, and it goes to Pearly May. She snatched at his arms, but he backed away. You've got to guess first, Mama. Oh, Zek, what is it? You're too big for me to spank anymore. Stop teasing and let me see. He handed her the bag, and when the dress came tumbling out, she said, Oh, Zek, it's the prettiest thing I've ever seen. I love it. Oh, it's so pretty. Then she sat at the table and cried, the dress held gently in her lap. Zek was startled. He said anxiously, What's the matter, Mama? What is it? She looked at him through misted eyes. Then she took his hands in hers and said, Oh, Zek, you've got a lot to learn about women, and you're about to marry one. A woman cries when her heart is filled with joy, and that's the kind of crying I'm doing now. You've made me so happy. I've never had a dress like this. I'll wear it proudly at your wedding. Put it on and let's see how it looks, he said, relieved. And don't scare me like that again. I sure hope Glenda doesn't cry when she's happy. She will. And when she's sad, too, it's a woman's way. You might as well get used to it. Emma took the dress into the bedroom, and when she returned, Zek stared at her, seeing someone other than his mother. He exclaimed, Mama, you're the prettiest woman I've ever seen. You look even better than Glenda did when she wore a dress like that at the frolic. Papa's got to see, too. I'll go bring him back to the house. You hide behind a door and step out in front of him. I'll bet his eyeballs pop out and roll around on the floor. I'll run get him now. Emma stepped out on the stoop and watched as he dashed away through the woods. Then she ran her fingers over the dainty lace and cried again. Chapter 24 Tobias McIvy, you put on that suit. If you don't, I'll never cook another bite of food as long as I live.
Well, now, that would be bad, wouldn't it? I guess I'll just have to learn to make stew.
For God's sake, Mr. McIvy, put it on, Frog urged. You heard what Miss Emma said? You want us to all suffer because you're so stubborn?
I'll hold him down, Skillet said, and you jerk off them overalls, and we'll hang him by his feet in a tree like a hog at scraping time and dress him up real pretty.
Tobias backed away as the two of them came toward him threateningly. He said, All right. I'll do it this once, but I still don't see why a man's got to dress up like a circus clown and go to a wedding. Back off now, I'll do it myself.
That's better, Emma said.
And as soon as you get done in the wagon, I'll put on my dress. They were camped 3 miles west of Fort Drum. Zek had insisted that everyone come to the ceremony, including Pearlie May and the three boys. It was to take place at high noon that day in the town meeting hall. Zek stood off to one side alone, watching and grinning, remembering what his mother said about Tobias and the suit and a team of oxen. He had been up since dawn, shaved twice, and slicked down his tousled sandy hair. His broad shoulders and muscled arms filled out the suit to perfection, and he was quite pleased with himself, although the rough wool made his legs itch, causing him to scratch constantly. When Frog laughed at him, he threatened him with a hickory club. Then all the attention was shifted to Tobias. Tobias finally came from the wagon, scratching also, and Frog put his hand over his mouth to suppress a giggle. Emma said,
"You look pure handsome, Tobias. I don't see why you made such a fuss over it. And all you men stop this foolish joshing. This is Zek's wedding day, and you're all acting like a bunch of silly children. Now stop it, you hear?"
Frog's grin vanished quickly as Emma went into the wagon, and when she came out, wearing the blue dress, they all gasped in admiration.
Pearlie May said, "Lawsy me, Mrs. Emma, you show a sight to see. Everybody at the wedding going to stare at you."
Tobias was seeing Emma in blue for the second time, and with just as much excitement as the first. He said, "You look so pretty, Emma. It seems more fitting for you and me to be getting married today, instead of Zek. Maybe we'll just take that honeymoon trip for them and let them go on back to the hammock."
"Hush up, Tobias," Emma said, feeling radiant from the compliments. "We're too old to even think of such a thing. This is Zek and Glenda's day, not ours. Now let's get started. We surely don't want to be late."
The procession then set forth, Tobias and Emma leading with the buckboard, followed by Skillet and his brood in the ox wagon, and Frog and Zek on horseback. After the wedding, Zek and Glenda would take the buckboard, and the others would return to the hammock in the wagon. As a wedding gift, Glenda's father had purchased round-trip passage for them on an inland schooner from Fort Pierce to Jacksonville, and they were to leave the buckboard at a livery stable in Fort Pierce. They arrived in the settlement a half hour before noon and found the street deserted. The store was closed, and tacked to the door there was a wreath of white flowers. They went directly to the meeting hall, since Emma cautioned Zek not to go to the Turner house beforehand and see Glenda prior to the ceremony, for it would bring bad luck. Horses, oxen, and wagons were hitched in front of the building, and when they entered, they were confronted by the same moth-eaten black suits Zek saw at the frolic. Most of the women had on hats topped with artificial fruit and flowers. Every head turned and stared as the McIvey clan marched single file up the center aisle and filled the seats at the front of the room. Pearlie May whispered,
"Now the first one of you young uns so much as open your mouth, I'll blister your hiney good when this over."
All the bodies were overheating the room, and Zek was sweating profusely when a fat woman in a pink dress stood up and started singing. The ceremony was to be performed by an itinerant preacher who conducted services in the meeting hall once a month. As soon as the song was finished, the preacher came up the aisle and motioned for Zek to come forward and stand to his left. An usher conducted Glenda's mother to a front seat. Then there was a commotion in the rear as Glenda and her father entered, causing another bout of neck-stretching and staring. Zek stared wide-eyed, seeing Glenda in a flowing white dress, her red hair covered by a veil of white lace. She floated up the aisle, her face beaming, her eyes sparkling and transfixed on Zek as her father guided her to his side. Blood pumped through him so vigorously, his face turned white and then crimson, flushing back and forth, and his legs wobbled as if he would pitch forward and fall flat. The ceremony was a blur, incomprehensible words flowing from the wool-draped preacher, sweating and scratching, all of it unreal, until he felt himself slipping the ring on her finger, a simple gold band made from a Spanish doubloon. Then the veil came up, and he was aware of kissing her, a flood of people pressing them, pumping his hand and hugging Glenda, then a loud wail as Pearlie May's hand struck flesh.
Zek followed Glenda outside, where they were greeted by a spring day come early, a pale blue sky, emerald trees flooded with soft sunlight. She took his arm and clung to him as they led the gathering down a dirt street, stirring up puffs of dust, heading to the Turner house for punch and cake. Once again, there was hand-pumping, back-slapping, and hugging, until finally he said to himself, "Please, Lord, no more, let it end." He was not aware Glenda was gone and was surprised when she came from the bedroom wearing a pink cotton dress and white ribbon in her hair. She took his hand and whispered, "It's time now, Zek. We can go." He picked up her bag in the hallway. Then everybody spilled from the house to watch as they headed for the buckboard. He lifted her to the seat, jumped in and slapped the reins, causing the horse to bolt forward. Glenda looked back and waved, but all Zek could see was the wreath on the storefront as it flashed by. The horse ran full gallop for 2 miles, bouncing the buckboard over ruts, until finally she shook his arm vigorously and said, "We keep going like this, Zek. That poor horse won't make it to Fort Pierce. There's no hurry. The schooner doesn't leave until tomorrow." He slowed the horse to a walk, put his arm around her, and pulled her close to him. Then he turned the buckboard toward a cypress stand off to the right. When he reached the trees, he stopped and said, "I've got to get out of this wool suit. I'm about to die, and I feel like I've got the itch. I don't see how somebody like that preacher can wear one of these things all the time. It just ain't natural." He took off the tie, coat, and shirt and threw them into the buckboard, revealing a chest covered with beads of sweat. Then he took denim pants and shirt from a bag and walked into the stand. In a few moments, he shouted back, "There's a spring in here, Glenda. I'm going to splash myself down some. I'll only be a minute." When he returned, she wasn't there. He stood by the empty buckboard, puzzled, noticing that her valise was gone. He glanced across the prairie and saw nothing. Suddenly feeling panic, he wondered if she had decided the marriage was a mistake and was making her way back to Fort Drum. He said, "Glenda? Glenda?" The voice came from behind a palmetto clump. "Over here, Zek. I'm here." He walked rapidly into the trees and found her, sitting on a blanket, spread over a bed of fronds. The white ribbon was missing, and a cascade of red swirled down over her shoulders. The dress was also missing, and the petticoat, too. All of it. He stared at her, spellbound. Then he dropped down beside her. "Don't you do that again. You scared the heck out of me." "It's the only way I can keep you off that buckboard. Don't you realize we're married now? We don't have to wait any longer." He reached over and touched her soft shoulder, and then he said, "Glenda, I'm about to bust wide open from just the sight of you, but I don't want to go about this wrong. I've never been with a woman before, but I've seen many a bull be rough and nearabouts kill a cow. I don't want to be that way and hurt you." "The only way you'll hurt me is to ignore me, Zek McIvy. So stop that foolish talk right now. You're not a bull, and I'm not a cow. Come on over here where you belong." When he moved closer, the sweet smell of her came to him like orange trees in bloom, at once intoxicating and exhilarating. He kissed her, and then he took her into his arms, gently, ever so gently. Zek lay on his back and stared upward, feeling comatose, as if the blood had been drained from him. Glenda snuggled closer to him, and he rubbed his hand over her shoulders and into the mass of soft hair. He said, "What would you think if we didn't go to Jacksonville? I don't care anything at all about those theaters and parks. I just want to be with you. We could go into Fort Pierce and buy supplies and a little tent. Then we could drift around the prairie, camping out like this." "I'd like that. I don't want to go to Jacksonville either. It was Daddy's idea, not mine. I didn't enjoy being there when I was in school." "I thought you did. You were wrong. And there are a lot of other things you don't know about me yet." She raised up on her elbows and looked at him. "You think I can't be a strong woman like your mother, don't you?" "I've never said that," he answered defensively. "Well, I can. I'll do everything I have to. All I want is to be a good wife and make you happy. And I will, too, you'll see.
You've already made me happy.
Not as much as I will. I can be all the woman you'll ever need.
Zek kissed her, this time a lingering kiss.
Then he murmured,
I've got an idea. We're not going to make it to Fort Pierce tonight.
Who cares? She said,
drawing him to her.
Chapter 25.
Damn, Zek said, looking down at the cow with its stomach slit open. That's a fourth one in 2 days.
Skillet dismounted and examined the carcass. All they took again was the heart and liver. They must have a powerful craving for that kind of meat. It shows a waste.
I sure would like to get my sights on whoever's doing this, Zek said.
Skillet remounted and said, They keep this up, we won't have much to brand.
Or sell, either. Let's take what we got on back to the corral.
Zek and Skillet popped their whips, causing the cows to lurch forward. Far in the distance, smoke drifted upward as Frog heated the branding iron, waiting. It was late May, a month later than they usually completed the roundup, but Tobias had been sick again and insisted they wait until he could help. No amount of persuasion by Emma or Zek could keep him at the house, and Zek worried constantly as he watched his father become more gaunt from the hot sun and the hard work of branding. Frog opened the gate at the sound of approaching hooves, then slammed it shut when the cows rushed inside. Tobias said to him, How many did you count?
19?
That's what I got, too. I thought there would be more than that.
Zek reined his horse and said, They done it some more, Papa. All shot in the head and the belly slit open. That makes about 40 so far.
How long you figure they've been dead when you found the last ones? Tobias asked.
Not long. No more than a day, maybe less.
Them bastards is getting awful brave. They must be out there summers right now, watching us. This keeps up, we might all have to go hunting, but this time it won't be for four-legged varmints. I can't understand why any man would shoot a cow for the heart and liver. He could get as much meat out of a rabbit. Just pure meanness, Skillet said. Maybe they move on soon, let us be. They don't, we ought to set some ashes on fire with the Winchesters.
You want us to go looking for them? Zek asked. Me and Skillet and Frog could ride the woods at night. They bound to build a fire, lest they eat raw meat, and that ain't likely.
No, better not, Tobias responded. I got a notion that sooner or later they'll come to us, and besides that, we got to get ready for the grazing drive. We're late already.
If it suits all of you, Frog said, let's quit the jawing and get done with the branding. I don't like to be late for supper since Miss Glenda started making them huckleberry pies.
She spoiled us all, pure and simple, Tobias said. First thing you know, we'll be taking baths before having victuals. That wouldn't be no bad idea for Frog, Skillet said. If he'd wash up some every month or so, them buzzards wouldn't follow us all the time like they do. Pearly May asked me just the other day if we had skunks in the barn, and it was Frog feeding his horse.
Ain't nothing in the world stinks worse than nigger sweat, Frog said. It was you she smelled, not me.
No wonder Glenda thinks everybody out here is crazy, Zek said. Let's go on and get done with the work. I got a chore to do at the house.
I know what chore you got in mind, Frog said. I peeked in your window the other night, and I ain't never seen such carrying on. You so weak now you can't pick up a branding iron. You better stay away from that house, you know what's good for you. I knowed a man once who got hitched and done like you doing, then first thing you know he'd got so skinny a dog buried him thinking he was a bone.
Skillet suddenly grabbed Frog, lifted him off the ground, and pointed his backside upward. He said, Get the branding iron, Mr. Zek. See, can you pick it up? Then stick it to him, and we'll see how loud a frog can holler. Zek took the glowing iron from the fire and held it 3 inches from Frog's rear, singeing his pants. Frog shouted,
I was just kidding, Mr. Zek. Don't put that thing to me. I didn't peek in no window. I swear I didn't.
He bellers loud, don't he?
Skillet chuckled, releasing his grip. He'll draw all the gators out in the swamp for a chomp of frog meat.
Frog stood up and rubbed his pants as Tobias said, Lordy, lordy, I hope them rustlers ain't watching us now. If they are, they'll think this outfit is run by a bunch of loons. No wonder they ain't scared of us.
Don't you worry none about that, Mr. Tobias, Skillet said. We just funnin' now. We come on them polecats, the funnin' stops. Ain't gonna be no playtime with them.
That's right, Frog agreed. It's going to be a whole lot worse than a branding iron and singed breeches.
I still think we ought to go after them, Zek said. If we don't find them first, they'll do us just like somebody did the dogs.
Glenda became a member of the McIvey clan with ease, and Emma liked her immensely, finding in her the companionship of a daughter she always wanted. Glenda refused to stand idly by as Emma and Pearlie May prepared meals. She peeled potatoes and chopped onions, reddening her eyes, and when there was nothing more to do, she went alone into the woods and gathered berries for pies. In her spare moments, she transformed the bare cabin Zek built for them into a home, putting up curtains and covering the bedroom floor with a braided rug, decorating the walls with little knick-knacks she brought from Fort Trump. Zek enjoyed her pampering more than he would admit, and each evening, as he headed for the hammock, he ran Ishmael faster than usual. She also convinced him to spend 1 hour each night beside a coal-oil lamp, learning to read and write. At first he resisted, but as the words gradually took on meaning, he went at it eagerly, realizing a previously unknown world was opening for him. Emma watched it all with deep satisfaction, knowing that when children came, Glenda could give them something more than she had been able to offer Zek, a chance to break free and do something more than grub for survival. There were other things in the world besides planting collards and skinning coons and herding cows and fighting wolves, things such as books and music and church services, and Glenda would lead the way. These things were now beyond Tobias, and maybe Zek too, but her grandchildren could sample them if they so desired. At least they would have the opportunity to choose. It was not that Emma regretted any part of her own life. The sacrifices she made willingly, and if the choice were offered to her anew, she would follow Tobias into the wilderness again with only a frying pan and the clothes on her back. This was her destiny, an avenue life offered which she accepted without hesitation, and she never looked back or complained about things she might have missed along the way. Each step she took, each hardship overcome, and each valley of fear transgressed intact, brought her closer to the realization of a hope she never abandoned, a better life for Zek and his life mate and for those yet to come. If someday she could be surrounded by grandchildren whose faces were filled with joy and anticipation rather than just a grim determination to survive, then the long and difficult journey would have been worthwhile. Emma took the coffee pot from the stove, poured 2 cups, and put them on the table. She said to Glenda, "Come and sit with me. Those men will be coming in soon with their stomachs growling. We can have a few minutes of peace and rest before they get here." Glenda sipped the coffee, and then she said,
"I don't see how you cooked for so many before you had Pearlie May to help. It must have been a chore."
"Oh, it wasn't so bad. It's as easy to cook for 6 as it is for 3. You just add a little extra to the pot. And there were times when the only things I had to cook were cocktail flour and coon meat. That makes it simple. You should have seen poor old Skillet when he came to us. He was so hungry, he would have eaten boiled cypress bark. Frog and Bonza were just about as bad off, too."
"We knew hard times, too, but not that bad," Glenda said.
"When we first came to Fort Drum, it was nothing but wilderness.
Daddy brought the lumber down from Jacksonville in an ox cart and built the store himself. It was a long time after that, when the little settlement began to grow up around the store. I can remember Daddy going to Fort Capron to meet the schooner and bring him back goods a piece at a time, whatever he could get. Sometimes he traded a few turns of cloth for deer meat and a sack of nails for potatoes. Zek doesn't know this about my family, and I haven't told him. He thinks the store has always been there, stocked with food and other things. But it hasn't."
Emma put down her cup and took Glenda's hand in hers.
"Glenda, I know why you're helping me so much in the kitchen, even doing the wash when Pearlie May could do it. Just don't try so hard. You don't have to prove anything to Zek. If you asked him how I spend each day, he couldn't tell you. He knows I always have food ready when he's hungry, and I wash his clothes, but that's all. He's not here during the lonely times. What he needs now is a wife to love, not a cook and housekeeper. He's had that all his life, and that's all he's ever had. I've given him those things, but I can't give him the kind of love you can. Don't put yourself against me. We're two different people and two different things to him. He needs you as a wife, not a mother." I'm not sure love is enough by itself, Glenda said. I know it has taken hard work as well as love for you to do the things you've done to keep your men alive. When we first met, Zek thought I wouldn't be up to it, that all I wanted was to be in Jacksonville and go to theaters and dances. I've never wanted such things, and I can't even imagine myself married to some bank clerk in Jacksonville who plays the piano. I want to be here, riding with Zek, being his companion and partner as well as his wife, chasing cows if he wants me to, doing whatever he wants and being whatever he wants me to be. I love him that much. He's all I've ever wanted, and I thought for a long time he didn't want me. I felt there was someone else, and I had lost out. And I had almost given up when he finally asked me to marry him.
Zek will make you a kind and loving man, like Tobias, in his own way, Emma said. But there's one thing you'll have to remember. He was brought up in the wilderness, and that's all he's ever known. It's inside him. He didn't shy away from you because he thought you couldn't live out here. It was because he thought he wasn't good enough for you. And that if he married you, you would make him abandon the wilderness and go elsewhere. This he will never do. You'll have to understand that, Glenda, and be patient with him. Zek will do the best he can to make you happy. He may not always show it, like his father sometimes doesn't show it, but he will.
You know, Glenda said, I'm glad you're you, Emma. I could never talk like this with my mother.
You'll never know how many times I've yearned to just sit and talk with another woman, like we're doing now. That's what I've missed the most. I'm so glad you're here, and I'm proud to have you as my daughter.
While we're talking woman talk, I have a secret to share, Glenda said, smiling. I'm pregnant.
Oh, Glenda! That's wonderful, Emma exclaimed. I'm so happy for you and Zek. When is it due?
I think I'm about 2 months along. It must have happened real soon after we were married.
Have you told Zek? He hasn't mentioned it, and I know he couldn't keep it inside.
No, I'm not going to for a while yet. And I don't want you to either.
Glenda, I don't understand, Emma said, puzzled. Why would you keep it from him? He'll know sooner or later. Women do swell up, you know.
I want to go on the drive with all of you. If Zek knew about this, he wouldn't let me go. I just know he wouldn't.
The drive isn't as important as this, Emma reasoned. I have to go because I'm the cook, but Pearlie May can stay here and look after you. You shouldn't hide this from Zek.
Going with Zek this time is important to me. I've got to prove to him I can do it. I know it would be foolish to take the baby out there next summer, and that's why I must go now. I just have to, Emma.
I've already told you. You don't have to prove anything to Zek. If you'll stay, I'll stay with you. The men go on roundups by themselves and take along smoked beef and hardtack. They can do the same thing on a drive. It would be hard for Pearlie May to go by herself and look after her boys and cook, too. And besides that, Zek and Tobias know how to cook rabbits and coons. They'll do fine without us.
No, I want to go, Glenda insisted. I won't stay behind.
Is it really that important to you?
Yes. It is.
Well, I'll say one thing, Emma said, resigned. You're a McIvy, for sure. You're as stubborn as Tobias or Zek ever hoped to be. I'll share your secret, under one condition.
What's that?
Glenda asked, glad that Emma was about to agree. If you get to feeling poorly, you and I will turn back. This baby means more to me than all the gold in Punta Rasa, and I know it would to Zek, too. Will you promise me this?
Yes, I promise. But I know I'll be fine. I may not even be showing by the time the drive ends. Then I'll tell Zek.
When we get back this time, we'll really have something to celebrate, Emma said.
We'll have a party. The first one we've ever had out here. You can make the pies, and I'll do the rest, and we'll invite your mother and father.
That would be wonderful, Glenda said. And when the baby comes, we'll have another. It should be close to Christmas. We'll have our own Christmas frolic and birthing party at the same time.
I don't know how I'll be able to keep this to myself, but I'll try. And I'm so happy, Glenda. I've wanted a baby around this place for such a long time. I just might take it away from you.
We'll share, Glenda laughed. And if it's twins, you can have one and I'll take the other.
Chapter 26
1,080 sets of 6-foot horns bobbed in unison as the herd was prodded from the main corral and turned to the northwest. The men were on horseback to the rear and on the flanks, followed by Emma and Glenda in the buckboard and Pearlie May with her load of jumping jacks in the ox wagon. Tobias decided they should take the herd to the salt marsh for grazing, but if heavy rains came or mosquitoes appeared in numbers beyond their usual annoyance, they would avoid the place like plague. The memory of their disaster there was far too fresh in their minds to approach the marsh with anything but extreme caution. By noon of the first day, Glenda's skin was burned tomato red by the relentless prairie sun, and she retreated from the open buckboard to the protection of the covered wagon. Emma greased her neck, face, and arms with lard to ease the stinging pain, and she did not complain. The next morning she was back on the buckboard wearing long sleeves, a bandana around her neck, and a sunbonnet. She also adjusted to the fact that others would be watching as she used a palmetto clump instead of an outhouse, and her first trip to such a toilet ended in pandemonium when she unexpectedly stepped into and flushed a covey of quail, their wings sounding like thunderclaps as they roared upward from their nesting place. Zek watched and tried vainly to suppress a giggle as she bolted from the palmetto and ran for the buckboard, her skirt flapping. Emma watched Glenda constantly, beseeching her not to carry buckets heavy with water from nearby springs when they made camp, Glenda doing it anyway. No one seemed to notice this extra attention Emma was giving Glenda as she insisted on doing her share of camp chores. Zek brought along the tent he purchased for their honeymoon trip, giving them this one small measure of privacy. He pitched the tent away from the group and took first watch so he could be with her most of each night. One morning he awoke to find Glenda sitting upright, frozen with terror, her eyes transfixed on a rattlesnake coiled at her feet. He whispered, "Don't move. It just came in to get warm. I've found them in my boots and in the bedroll with me. If you stay still, it won't strike." She watched, horrified, as Zek reached slowly for the rifle, aimed it, and blew the snake's head 10 feet from the tent, its headless body then thrashing violently as blood gushed onto the blanket. She screamed, "Get that thing out of here! Get it out!" He said calmly, "It can't hurt you now. I'll skin it out for breakfast." "You what?" "That's good eating, Glenda. Tastes like chicken. We have it all the time on drives when we get tired of beef." Glenda was about to gag when Emma rushed into the tent, alarmed by the gunshot and screaming.
"What is it?" she asked anxiously. "Are you all right, Glenda?"
"Snake," Zek said, pointing.
"I'll have it ready time you get the frying pan hot."
"Oh. You sure you're all right, Glenda?" "I'm fine. It just scared me, that's all."
"I won't tell you what happened first time one of those varmints crawled in bed with me," Emma said. "It'd ruin your breakfast."
Glenda dressed shakily, came outside, and was greeted by the smell of meat sizzling in the cast-iron skillet. She sat by Zek as he put a chunk of fried snake onto a tin plate and started eating. The cooked flesh was white like chicken breast, and she accepted the bite he handed her. She put it in her mouth reluctantly, chewed and swallowed. Then she said,
"Not bad. It does taste something like chicken. I know you like it, so you can have the rest of it. I'll just have coffee and a biscuit."
Zek gulped down the chunk and took another piece from the frying pan. He said,
"Just wait till you try some of Mama's fried rabbit brains for breakfast. It's even better than snake."
"Not now, Zek," Glenda said, nibbling the biscuit. "Tell me about it later. I've got to go to the tent for a minute. I forgot something."
He kept munching as she went around the side of the tent and then ran for the nearest palmetto clump, clutching her stomach. They drifted lazily, finding abundant grass and remaining until it was cropped short, spending days under clear blue skies not torn asunder by violent thunderstorms, enjoying gentle, cooling rains in late afternoon, Glenda enthralled by brilliant rainbows forming glowing arches over the flat prairie land. This was her first trip inland, and she was fascinated by seemingly endless flights of herons and egrets and ibises, and by herds of deer galloping close by, stopping momentarily to stare at them curiously, then bounding away. One night the cry of wolves pierced the stillness, causing the cattle to low nervously. Glenda stayed up all night, watching wide-eyed.